Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
We honestly, most of us, believed that it was entirely possible that he would die at work. He was that entirely committed to TMJ4 News, to that whole process, to this community, and actually had a couple of medical incidents over his years that required medical attention in the workplace. So to suggest that was not even really a joke.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's your host, Vince Vitrano.
Everybody focused on the November election, 2 weeks out today for the Wisconsin fall primary. Early in-person voting underway. You need to check with your local clerk's office for information on how to do that if you would like to vote ahead of August 13th. Keep getting questions about this. We're going to spend a little bit of time on it. There are, again, statewide referendum questions on the ballot to amend our state constitution. Don't know that it's gotten a lot of coverage, although coverage is starting to pick up as more and more voters ask people like you and me, Adam, like, hey, what's with the, I heard there's another amendment or another referendum question. What is this about?
I've been seeing signs in my neighborhood. Vote yes.
Are you?
Vote
haven't
no.
Seen any signs yet.
Yes, I have. I'm up in River West and all along Humboldt.
You live in a little more politically active neighborhood than I do.
A little bit. And particularly with that demographic, a lot of people just generalizing a little bit, but a lot of vote no signs, which we'll touch on in a minute.
So let's make this as clear for you as possible. Two questions. They're yes or no questions. A yes vote for each means we change the state constitution. A no vote means status quo. We stay as is. It is a binding referendum, which means that whatever happens is what happens. To get to this point, whatever you want to put, if you want to change the state constitution, that proposal needs to pass two consecutive sessions of the state legislature. The governor is not involved in this process. So the governor does not have a veto authority, doesn't get involved at the front end. Two successive sessions of the state legislature need to pass identical wording for the referendum. Then it goes on the ballot. Majority vote rules in this particular case, and it is binding. Both questions deal with the issue of who gets to decide how Wisconsin spends federal money that comes pouring into the state every year. Now, some of it is earmarked for specific things, so we're not talking about stuff for some of the healthcare initiatives or various other things. That's already earmarked and goes to certain places. But for those millions, if not billions of dollars that come in, say, for example, the COVID relief money that we had over the last several years. Right now, the governor has broad discretion into how that money is spent. These questions seek to change that and would give more power to the state legislature to decide. In the simplest of terms, it's do you want the governor to spend the money how he or perhaps one day she sees fit, or do you want it to go through a process, a legislative process? So we'll break down the politics of it in a minute, but I'll read for you both questions that are going to appear on your ballot. Question one, delegation of appropriation of power. So shall Section 35(1) of Article 4 of the Constitution be created to provide that the legislature may not delegate its sole power to determine how monies shall be appropriated? Eh? Question two. It's legalese, right? So which is why I read this to you, and then we'll break it down. Question two. Allocation of federal monies. Shall Section 35(2) of Article 4 of the Constitution be created to prohibit the governor from allocating any federal monies the governor accepts on behalf of the state without the approval of the legislature by joint resolution or as provided by legislative rule?
Now, that one reads a little bit more straight, I think. There's a lot less wiggle room on that. It's very specific.
And I can't remember why they broke it into two questions. It was initially one, and now it's broken into two. Nonetheless, this would change the state constitution. Let me break it down for you this way. If you look at this through a purely political present-day lens, and you're a conservative, you're a yes vote. You want the Republican-controlled legislature to make these decisions, not the Democratic governor, Tony Evers. The flip side also true. If you are a liberal, you're thinking about today, you don't want the Republican-controlled legislature, you don't want Robin Voss and Devin Lemahieu in the Senate dipping their hands into these decisions. You want your guy, Governor Evers, to do that. For those who want to be more analytical, it's a little bit tougher question. So if you take the politics out of it, and even if you take present day out of it, it comes down to, do you want one person at the head of the government to make decisions on how to spend these federal monies that are allocated to our state? Or do you want 132 people to do that?
If you want a real world example of what the current setup looks like, I think about, so in Milwaukee, we are currently trying to get a pro soccer stadium built. And originally, the money for that stadium was to be included in Governor Evers' budget, which the Republican Joint Finance Committee said, now we're taking this out, which is to be expected. So last year, the governor went around and took American Rescue Plan funds, $9.8 million to be specific. It was amongst a larger process for other infrastructure projects, and took that federal money to allocate it directly for that soccer stadium project. The process is still ongoing, but if you want to look at, okay, so how does the governor use federal dollars and get around what the current setup is, that is how that would play out. As of right now, this, of course, would change that all up.
Yeah, and here's why I come up with the number 132 people. Legislature is two bodies. You got 99 in the Assembly, you have 33 in the Senate. So do you want the governor, whoever that may be? And remember, things change.
Mm-hmm.
One day it could be a Republican back in the state house. One day Democrats could control the legislature, one or both bodies. So that's why I say present day politics. But right now, do you want the governor to make those decisions, or do you want to see it run through that vast governing by committee that is the state legislature? So that's how it breaks down politically. I think a lot of people will vote according to their politics, as long as they know which side they're on, now that we've explained that. Again, if you're conservatives and you want to see Robin Voss and Majority Leader Lemahieu have a little bit more discretion, or much more discretion, as the case may be in this case, how we spend those federal dollars, then you want to hand it to them. If you're a Democrat and you want Governor Tony Evers to make those decisions without meddling from the legislature, then you're going to vote no on both of these.
And it's important to make that distinction for these amendments, because this is not the first amendment-related question that voters have had to ask already this year. We had in April the amendments that were approved barring the use of private money to run elections, and then also reaffirm only election officials can work. And then there's another one that will be on the ballot in November regarding that only U.S. citizens can vote in local elections. So that's a lot of amendments you got to work through. And especially with it being the primary, it might have snuck up on you. So that's why it's important to discuss.
And why are these amendments as opposed to laws or things that would be passed by the legislature, signed by the governor? These are workarounds. We've talked about this over the last several years. Republicans remain continuously frustrated over the fact that they pass legislation, they kick it over to the governor, the governor vetoes it, they don't have enough votes to override. So then things that the Republicans want to see done keep running up against that wall. Frustrated by that, these are end-arounds. How do we get the governor out of that process, put it directly in front of voters? The last number that you mentioned there have worked in the Republicans' favor. They've gotten what they wanted. They did it on bail reform as well. So that's why you're seeing more of these come up in terms of, why are we altering the Constitution? This is the workaround for Republicans in the legislature to try to get past the governor's authority, who continues to veto a lot of their legislation, things they want to see done. It's why they're going to this process and why you're being asked these questions.
And there's also historical precedent too, Vince, because this has been a power for the governor of the state for like 90 plus years. They were granted it during the Depression, when obviously you needed someone to just say, hey, we got to get this money out now. We got to recover because we're in some tough times. So there's a lot of historical precedent. And that's why it's important to do the research and before you vote.
Questions will be on your ballot in 2 weeks, or today if you vote early. And whatever the voters decide, again, it's a binding referendum. That vote is final on this issue. 8:20 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
On Wisconsin's Morning News. Adam Roberts alongside Vince Vitrano. Big birthday today in Milwaukee legacy history. It is the 90th birthday of one Alan Huber Selig, but most of us know him as Bud. For those familiar with the former yeah. Brewers owner and baseball's de facto and then actual commissioner for about 30 plus years, it should come as no surprise that for much of those 90 years on earth, Selig has maybe been the biggest lover of the game of baseball that many of us have ever seen. I love starting at a young age, going back to games at Old Borchert Field on Milwaukee's north side to watch the then minor league Milwaukee Brewers. While Selig was a sophomore at UW-Madison, he traveled down the road back to his hometown to ensure he was in person to see the debut of his city's first MLB squad, which ultimately ended up as a 10-inning thriller, ending with a Billy Brunton home run and a 3-2 Milwaukee Braves win over the St. Louis Cardinals. 15 years and one messy team divorce with the Braves later, Selig would lead the charge to bring baseball back to Bruce City, acquiring the bankrupt Seattle Pilots in 1970 and rechristening them after his beloved minor league Brewers. Now, while Selig's legacy in Milwaukee easily solidified, outside of southeast Wisconsin, the waters have been murkier over the especially last 30 years. Many baseball fans' lasting memories of Selig were his slow response to address steroids in the sport in the mid-2000s, as well as a less than graceful handling of the 1994 MLB strike, summarized at the time in an op-ed by WTMJ's Bob Redden.
Even though it's the players who walked off the job, it's the Brewers owner who is catching most of the blame for canceling the rest of the 1994 baseball season. In fact, since last week's announcement that there would be no postseason, the name Bud Selig has become synonymous with the words, "the man who killed baseball."
But fear not, fear mongers.
That's tough.
Baseball still very much alive and kicking 30 years later, and at least in Milwaukee, that likely would not have been the case if not for the insistence of Bud to make it so. When Old County Stadium needed a replacement, it seemed not so likely to happen for many of those years. Selig was always there to remind the developers, the fans, and maybe most importantly, the politicians, what got them the Brewers in the first place. Speaking to WTMJ, again in 1994.
Back in the 60s, when this thing was being put back together, I saw it over and over. I'll tell you what it's time for now. Two things: courage and vision. This is a time in life for courage and vision.
And to that point, the message appeared to take hold as the Brewers are still playing in the house that Bud, if not built, certainly helped craft to this very day. Selig's legacy outside Wisconsin may be mixed, but his influence on the fabric of Milwaukee baseball, undeniable. And if you would ever question whether or not Selig truly loves the American pastime, this portion of his 2017 MLB Hall of Fame induction speech should leave little doubt of that.
I teach at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, my alma mater, as well as Marquette Law School and Arizona State University. And then at night, I still find myself in front of a television set watching every baseball I can. It really has been a remarkable journey.
So happy 90th, Alan Huber, Bud Selig. I am, of course, as a young Brewers fan, proud to say that you have always been proud of Milwaukee.
You know, it's interesting to hear Brewers manager Pat Murphy say he spoke with Bud recently, mm-hmm. that he's still very much connected to that team and to Milwaukee baseball. Love that aspect of it. I mean, I still, you talk about the stadium thing. I was a middle schooler, seventh grade, when we saw the renderings, the proposals, the we need a new stadium and this is going to, that's how long it was from when that started to when it actually happened. Middle school, right? And it was like, hey, we're going to get a new stadium. And it was like 20 years.
And again, instrumental as, probably more instrumental maybe than anyone as the old owner of the team. And not limited to Brewers as well as Selig's legacy. Interleague play played a big hand in that as the commissioner in the late 90s. Also the World Baseball Classic in the mid-2000s, instrumental in getting that up and running. So the legacy of Selig very much felt in all aspects of the sport, both right here in southeast Wisconsin as well as all around the world.
The other thing, keeping the Major League Baseball, his office right here in Milwaukee. Now, I don't need to go to New York. I don't need to go do this in some big city. I got a really nice office here in the U.S. Bank Building. I'm going to stay here, thank you.
Absolutely.
That, and I don't know how many times folks saw him at Gillies in Wauwatosa or some of his familiar haunts. He was still just a guy, just a Milwaukee guy like a lot of us. So, I mean, I personally saw him one time at Gillies, which was kind of near where I grew up. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's where we, you know, that was our custard place. And, oh, yeah, Bud Selig. And then, but people mostly left him alone. He just kind of did his thing. It was said that he got lunch there every day.
See, now you mentioned.
I don't know if that persists yet.
See, now you mentioned Gillies, and I'm thinking of the one we had in Fond du Lac, and I'm realizing I didn't eat breakfast. So, a Gilly burger sounds fantastic now.
90 years young, Bud Selig.
Happy birthday.
829 on Wisconsin's Morning News. On Wisconsin's Morning News. Usually when they yell timber, that means the tree is coming down.
And in this case, it would appear that the opposite is true. Vince, you and I, we've seen the renderings. If you're listening, you probably have as
Everybody
well.
Everybody likes a good rendering.
Oh, we're all suckers for a good rendering. Shout out Greg Matzik. If plans go through to redevelop what is currently the Marcus Performing Arts Center's parking garage site, you've likely driven by it downtown just off of Water Street. Milwaukee could soon be home, if all things go according to plan, once again to the world's largest mass timber building. and potentially also the largest building throughout the state of Wisconsin. Now, the title of largest mass timber building was first held in Milwaukee in 2022 when the Ascent high-rise building opened.
We've had people fly in from as far as Taiwan and Brazil to see this building.
Tim Gockman takes pride in showing off Ascent. He's managing director for Newland Enterprises, the group that developed the 25-story high-rise in downtown Milwaukee. He joined Wisconsin's Midday News to explain the growing appeal of building with mass timber.
Faster and more precisely and with a lot less labor. So 30 days less driving piles because the building is so much lighter. Typically, for a concrete building that size, we'd have about 55 construction workers on the deck. The entire frame of Ascent was assembled by 12 people using cordless drills.
There's also a different feel for those living inside.
When we have natural elements in a built environment, we feel better about it. Daylight, views of water, plants.
Jessica Tai, WTMJ News.
Now I'm asking the important questions here. You talk about those cordless drills building the frame with a dozen workers. Were those Milwaukee Tool cordless drills? Was that Black & Decker?
Right. I didn't need to know that part. Not that it matters, right? The drill is the drill. But I don't know. I kind of feel like some should have some steam power behind it.
Yeah, I mean, fair is fair. It looks nice and, of course, is still alive and well in downtown The Ascent. And now moving forward, I think they were saying if all, and again, that's a very important if.
Yeah, all a lot of stuff has to happen, but
it would be, I think, 55 stories. Isn't the U.S. Bank Center about 42, 43, somewhere in
that neighborhood?
Yes. So it'd be significantly taller and in an area where there's not a lot of tall buildings already. So you will see this one, if all goes according to plan, from a long way away.
I think you'd agree, though. Like, from the street, it's hard to tell. You don't necessarily distinguish it from other high-rises.
Right.
The ones that we've built here are very well done and beautiful, but, like, it doesn't look that different. It's the inside where you can see the exposed wood, and that's one of the features that people really like about it.
Right, and I think for most of us who don't live in those structures, which is most of us, you would never see the interior. So if you live inside, you have to do your job.
Get some friends,
take some pictures, have some parties, and do some advertising of your place.
Coming up next, this person is one of the most influential people in television news in Milwaukee, and you've probably never heard of him. That's next. ...8:45 on Wisconsin's Morning News this Tuesday morning. Sean is dead. If I said those words to any of my former TMJ4 News colleagues, they would know. Sean O'Flaherty passed away late last week, and he was, I believe his title was Operations Manager at TMJ4, his most current iteration. But he had been with TMJ4 News for 53 years.
Wow.
Or thereabouts.
Sure.
When you're past a half a century. Mm-hmm. But this is not a name that probably most people know. Now, Sean did when he started with the station in the early 70s. I believe he had a bit of an on-air stint as a reporter, but then sort of did everything else. He was a producer, editor. I mean, there was nothing he couldn't do. And as I say, his most recent title, I believe, was Operations Manager. But no one really knew what that was, and it didn't matter because no one really told Sean what to do. Sean did whatever Sean wanted to do. And what was extraordinary is nobody managed Sean because, A, he refused to be managed, and, B, everybody who might have otherwise managed him knew that he was probably smarter than them anyway, and so better just let this cat do what he does. And I predict there will be a period of certainly weeks, certainly months, if not years, where things start to happen at TMJ4 and they're like, why wasn't this done? Like, Sean did that. And people go, Sean did that? Yes, Sean did that.
And you know, it's always interesting, especially in our industry, if you are a Swiss Army knife of a worker, a Swiss Army knife of an employee and a broadcaster, that can go miles and miles further than any fancy reel or any big stand-up you did covering a major event. Just walking into an office and saying, what do you need me to do? Because I can do it all.
So Sean, I bring him up just to share his story because he's such an interesting person. And because if you watched a single newscast in the last 50 years at TMJ4 News, this guy somehow had an influence over it. Whether it was something that he did technically to set the station up for what it does to bring you the video and sound, whether it was reading through virtually every script in every newscast to check for, make sure the facts were straight, to check for how we had things labeled, to check for, did the producer enter this thing correctly so the proper graphic would come up on the screen? And again, No one managed Sean and told him to do that. He just sort of did that, right? He worked 7 days a week.
Wow.
But his choice. Again, I don't believe the man had a schedule. He came in when he came in. He left when he left. Most days, I mean, in his younger days, when I first got there in the early 2000s, Sean would be there for daybreak, so for that morning show, and he would be there through the 10 o'clock news.
It's a long day.
He would go, he'd oftentimes go home like midday for a few hours. He lived by himself. He survived, according to his obituary, by his brother. I knew he didn't have a lot of family. His parents had since passed on. And he would only travel maybe once or twice a year. He'd spend a week with family and then would always go to the, I think he went to the Consumer Electronics Show, the big show in Vegas. Or it might have been more news oriented, but either way, it was one of these tech shows. And where I started to get to know Sean was he would send back these hilarious daily updates. And Sean was not necessarily known for having a sense of humor if you just didn't, if you didn't know that otherwise, right? So he would send back these updates with celebrity sightings and all this other stuff. And you're like, this is coming from Sean? Because the other thing about Sean is he had a bit of an abrasive personality. Part of that came from he just really didn't care whether you liked him or not. He was mission focused all the time. And so if he had something to say to you, Adam, about something you wrote in a newscast, it wouldn't start with, hey, Adam, you're doing a great job today. Really appreciate this, that, and the other. One thing about one of your stories, if we could in the future try this instead of that, Sean was just like, this was wrong. Let's fix that. You're like, okay. You know, it would take you aback. Like people don't get talked to like that, nor do they respond well to that sometimes. What you had to do was eventually earned Sean's respect by demonstrating you had some sort of a brain. And you accepted his critiques and all the things that he offered, you could get in really, really good footing with him and you would learn to trust him. He is known to, although probably has not met many, if not any, of the spouses and boyfriends and girlfriends of the TMJ4 team, but he's known to all of them because Sean was the guy that would call in the middle of the night and your phone would ring and my wife would answer. And she said, this was the conversation. Hello, Sean here at the station. Vince needs to come to work. And then click. She'd like hand over the phone. I don't know, Sean at the station. And that was like, you know, when it's midnight, something usually not so good has happened. And so many of us received that phone call over his many years. He's just such an interesting character. And I'll share this with you as well. Sean did pass away peacefully. He died of cancer and had been battling that for quite some time. We honestly, most of us, believed that it was entirely possible that he would die at work. He was that entirely committed to TMJ4 News, to that whole process, to this community, and actually had a couple of medical incidents over his years that required medical attention in the workplace. So to suggest that was not even really a joke.
And to understand that in this industry, there is an underlying love of the game just amongst some people. You, in many cases, are married to broadcasting. As you said, you get that call at 1 a.m., okay. Something's gone down, Vince needs to come in, you go in. And just for someone to be so abrupt and blunt like that is pretty telling of the man that Sean was.
Well, earning Sean's respect was a hallmark for me. I think I got there a little while in and then soaked up his advice. I'm not suggesting that he didn't frustrate you once in a while. And we all could deal with that. The other cool thing I'll share real quick is Sean would, again, he did it all. So he was also a photographer, would go out overnight and shoot things and, record video. And he would be at some of these scenes. Sean had a street name. He called him Mr. Rogers.
Why is that?
I don't know. He just had, he's kind of an older dude. He had glasses and he'd come around and then, like, people around town when Sean would show up, would be like, Mr. Rogers here from Channel 4. He also was adept at hip hop, was current on all sorts of music and other things. The story they're saying now is some of my younger former colleagues took him to see the Taylor Swift movie because he was all about it.
How do you do,
not what
kids?
You would expect, right? Yeah. One of the most interesting people I've ever worked with and someone who's influenced television news in Milwaukee for more than half a century. Sean O'Flaherty, may you now finally, at long last, rest in peace. 8:52 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Dre Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Chance of some afternoon storms and a high of 88 degrees today, partly cloudy otherwise, and humid. And that humidity sticks with us tonight as we see a low down to 70. Right now we are at 74 in Milwaukee. We have some state fair fun ahead today. This one's sneaking up on you because we've had just a busy number of weeks here, as we always do in the summer. But, you know, RNC added in, Harley Homecoming and Aaron Water Show combining on the same weekend as German Fest. So we kind of lost track of stuff. So today we have judging for the Sporkies and the Drinkies.
Oh, boy.
With the fair opening already Thursday morning.
That's crazy. We were watching the monitors in here. Already the cream puffs being handed out to several people coming through the State Fair parking lot.
Cream Puffapalooza is tomorrow here on WTMJ. Tell you about that through the day. And among the finalists for the Sporkies, these are the awards they give every year for, like, best new food item at the fair. Some interesting ones. The Cool Ranch Doritos Pickle, Deep Fried Lemonade Bites, Dirty Chai Cinnamon Roll Lumpia, the Elvis Nachos, Hot Ham and Glazers, and the Rise and Swine from Camp Bar, which is a brioche-based waffle with some sugar and some toppings and custard and all sorts of good stuff.
Oh.
Who's hungry yet? Wisconsin State Fair opens on Thursday, 10 a.m. Live judging on the Sporkies and the Drinkies at 3 this afternoon. WTMJ Political Power Hour is coming up next. News is sponsored by Kowal Investment Group, the retirement specialists. Retire well with Kowal.